On May 2nd, 2011, Osama bin Laden was shot and killed inside a private residential compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan. He was killed by U.S. Navy SEALs operating under the direction of the CIA. His body then was flown directly to a U.S. Navy aircraft carrier in the Arabian Sea, about 600 miles away from the scene of the assassination. Bin Laden was quickly buried at sea. Was it to honor Muslim customs for burial, or was something more nefarious going on? The mystery of bin Laden and how he became the number one suspect for 9/11 is beginning to unravel. And our guest tonight has some inside information on how the United States government, our CIA, works. She will tell an amazing and shocking story, the background surrounding the 9/11 incident. She says she was there and she knows firsthand who did it. It was a false flag, an operation put together by the United States government, CIA, and Mossad, the Israeli Secret Service. 9/11 changed history, and it gave the Bush administration and its military-industrial complex associates complete control and power to operate as they wished in a very expensive war that has lasted a full decade, a war against terrorism. Susan Lindauer was an inside player, a go-between, traveling the back channels between the United States and the Iraqi government. She watched in horror in the preceding months leading up to 9/11, realizing nothing could be done to change the mission. The Bush administration was hell-bent on creating an event that would give them the power to invade Iraq and to control resources throughout the Arab world. And they had a willing ally, the neocon elements of the Israeli government. Stay tuned for this astounding personal story, personal experiences leading up to the shock and awe of the attack on 9/11. Our guest ended up being a victim of the Patriot Act, and even was in prison because of her unwillingness to cooperate with the Bush administration. This is a story of money and power and how less than 100 people changed the history of the world. Susan, welcome to the show, and I can't tell you how much we appreciate you coming on and telling us the gory story behind 9/11. How's your book doing?
It's going really well. My book is Extreme Prejudice, The Terrifying Story of the Patriot Act and the Cover-Ups of 9/11 in Iraq. And that's a long mouthful of a title for a great, it's like a spy thriller. It really is, it's an autobiography. It's the story of what happened to me when I tried to testify about the true facts of Iraqi pre-war intelligence and the 9/11 warnings and Iraq's contribution to the 9/11 investigation. And it was all the real facts, the real story are in my book, and it's very different than what you all were told.
You get your money's worth when you buy your book, Susan. I've read it. It's big and thick, but it's a great, great read.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank you. It's the story is the real facts are nothing like what Americans were told. For example, there was a peace option on the table that would have gotten the United States everything we wanted, including democratic reforms in Iraq, cooperation with the weapons inspections, cooperation with anti-terrorism. Iraq tried to give us financial documents on al-Qaeda figures that would have allowed us to shut down the financial pipeline, or part of the financial pipeline, feeding al-Qaeda. And we could have done a lot of things without ever sending in any soldiers at all. And it's just, you know, that the war on terror has had a tremendous cost on the United States. And I urge everyone who wants to help stop this war to to read my book and get educated on the facts.
Susan, why do you think the Bush administration chose the war route to begin with?
Oh, I think that it was profoundly embarrassing. As you know from my book, we warned about 9/11. The United States definitely had advanced knowledge of 9/11 from April and May of 2001 onwards, and the response to the advanced knowledge was that I, the asset covering the Iraqi embassy in New York, I was ordered to threaten the Iraqi government with war in the event that the conspiracy was achieved. And it was a very specific, a conspiracy involving airplane hijackings and a strike on the World Trade Center. And so I knew about this from April and May of 2001, and the government, the United States government, demanded that Iraq should receive these threats. And I was told very specifically to tell the Iraqi ambassador, the ambassador now, that the threat originated above the director of the CIA and above the Secretary of State at the highest levels of government. And he said it's way above the CIA. This is not a CIA decision. This is the top of the government. And this was in April and May of 2001.
I still don't get it. I mean, if Iraq was going to give us everything, why did that happen?
Well, they let 9/11 happen because they wanted to go to war. And this becomes a very important point because not everybody says, well, wait a minute, we all saw the airplane hijackings, but we also know that there was a demolition of that building, of those buildings, and that is actually true. And so one does not contradict the other. And where the 9/11 truth community is still coming to terms with this, because they correctly recognize that the buildings went through a demolition, a controlled demolition, rigged with explosives and miniature thermonuclear devices with thermate, containing thermate. And that's factually true. But what happened was we knew about the airplane hijackings, and the decision was already made to go to war with Iraq. That created motive and opportunity for a second orphan team favoring Israel. And I have to tell you that the Israelis had the most, I will explain why in a minute, the Israelis had the most knowledge of 9/11 of anybody. And I'll explain in a second. But an orphan team, we know that 2 weeks before 9/11 happened, in the third week of August, there was strange nightly activity between the hours of 3 a.m. and 5 a.m. After the janitorial trucks had already left the building, other trucks were identified entering the building, and they stayed till approximately 5 a.m. before the AAA personality New Yorkers started to arrive at 5:30 in the morning. These trucks had already left the building. They were already gone. But from 3 to 5 o'clock, something was going on in those buildings. And that's when we believe they laid the explosives.
3 to 5 a.m., huh? Well, Susan, they couldn't do all that in one. It had to be several days. They did.
Oh, it was over about a good question. It was over about a 10-day period from about the third week of August until the third or the fourth of September. And so it was finished, you know, at that point, once the explosives are in the building, it doesn't matter whether September 11th happens on the 9th or the 10th or the 15th or the 20th. Once the explosives are there, as soon as the hijacked airplanes strike the building, they're ready to go to execute the final stage. And the reason they would have executed the final stage was that they already had decided to go to war with Iraq. And they were already threatening Iraq with war, and they needed to maximize the devastation so they could shock the American people and traumatize the American people and the world community into throwing off the peace. Because at that moment, and here's where Americans are ignorant. I've got to tell you, we're ignorant of what goes on in the world sometimes. Before 9/11, the international community had hit a point where they loathed and despised and reviled the sanctions on Iraq. There was a deep antipathy towards the sanctions. Europe and Asia, China, Russia wanted peace with Iraq. And Iraq was going around the world wooing trade missions to come into the country and to negotiate contracts for, you know, rebuilding Iraq after the sanctions that would have been very extremely profitable for all the parties involved. So peace was going to have this huge peace dividend for everybody. And what you don't realize until you read my book is that the United States received special preferential contracts as well. The United States, the CIA, had demanded preferential contracts in telecommunications, healthcare, hospitals, pharmaceuticals, transportation. The Iraqis had agreed to buy 1 million American-manufactured automobiles from Detroit. They would ship them from Detroit to Iraq. 1 million a year for 10 years. Telecommunications is very significant because it would have allowed the CIA to control the cell phones, the satellite phones, the cable television. All of the internet media going in and out of Iraq would have been controlled by the CIA. It was, I mean, believe me, the CIA would have shifted these contracts to corporate. You can all hate the CIA, but the reality is, I'm just telling you the reality. The CIA would have shifted these contracts to corporations that were going to be friendly to U.S. interests. You better believe they would have done that. And so this was a huge coup. That when I say telecommunications, that's a big deal. From intelligence gathering standpoint, that's crucial. And Iraq agreed to it. Iraq was gonna give the United States every single thing that we could possibly ask for. And peace would have been highly profitable, extremely profitable. And so George Bush in 9/11 had to, he was fighting the peace. He had to overcome this huge momentum that was, pushing the whole world in a totally different direction. And he wanted his war so badly that that sacrificing the World Trade Center was not such a big deal for him. And of course, afterwards, he realized that it had backfired, but they thought that they could just shut everybody up. And so my CIA handler, Dr. Richard Fuse, received $13 million tax-free. I want to emphasize, this is taxpayer dollars, tax-free, off the 9/11 investigation. And I got arrested on the Patriot Act and thrown in prison because I wouldn't play ball with that. I don't have the kind of personality, as you can tell from listening to me, that's going to shut up. I was going to speak. And they knew it. And so I was held under indictment for 5 years. And my reputation was destroyed, Jerry. They tried to say I was incompetent, that I was nutty like a fruitcake, it was silliness. It was just, if you actually know me, the things they said about me were just ridiculously silly. But, my family members could not recognize some of the things they said. They said I was a religious maniac, and my Aunt Susie was like, well, yeah, you believe in God, but so does half America. I mean, come on, what is this? I believe in God, yes. Sue me. I believe in God, yes. Now, but you get the idea. It's just crazy what they did.
Who are you saying wanted the war? Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, that group?
A whole bunch of those people, the Wolfowitz crowd.
And why did they want the war?
For Israel. The Iraqi war was fought for one advantage, and that was Israel. And the thing that this is a big story, and I realize that it takes Americans by surprise, and it shakes you up, shakes up a lot of people's preconceptions about 9/11. The idea that we absolutely understood 9/11 was happening, and for months we threatened the Iraqi government. That's huge. People have trouble accepting that, but I know it because I'm the one who delivered the messages. So I'm not telling you what somebody else did before 9/11 that I'm reporting to you about. I'm telling you what actions I took myself. And the stuff with the peace framework, I was the one dealing with the Iraqi ambassador and the Iraqi diplomats. So I'm telling you again what I did myself and the reports that I delivered to my cousin, Andrew Card, chief of staff to George Bush. And the other thing that I can tell you that people always want to know about, and no interview is complete without this, is how the Israelis had the most precise information about 9/11. And I learned, for most of this period, I did not know where my CIA contact, Richard Fuse, my CIA handler, Richard Fuse, was getting his information about 9/11. But on the day of 9/11, when the first tower had fallen and the second tower was still standing, Richard Fuse blurted out something to me. I was in my living room, he was in his, we were watching television, shouting at our TVs, horrified. But we were horrified in a different way because we knew it was going to happen. And so it has a different element, a different ring to it, and a different feel to it when you're sick to your heart that you tried to stop this idiotic thing from happening, and here it is happening after all of your efforts. So we were just enraged. We were enraged. I mean, I can't, we're screaming at each other, and he blurted something out. He said, Susan, how often do you think there was footage that was released the next day of the airplanes flying over the water and striking the World Trade Center. Okay, the footage went out to the public on September 12th. But Richard already had that information on September 11th, right after the attack occurred. And so he blurted out to me, he said, Susan, how often do you think that a man and a woman are standing on a street corner with a camera, video camera, queued up to record a car accident? He said it never happens. If anything, their arms are whipping around, and they're catching just the last seconds of the accident. It's unsteady and blurry, and they're hysterical. You know, they're screaming and jumping up and down for it, and they're moving their hands too much, so you can hardly see what's happened. And he said, this man and woman who did this are Mossad agents, and they were waiting outside the building with the camera ready to go, all ready to record that airplane fly in. And he said they held their hands so steady. And I said to him, and I was hysterical. I mean, I admit it, I was just hysterical. I was just watching the building collapse, and I was waiting for the second building to collapse, and I was just like, you mean to tell me that I had been looking for this attack for months, demanding that the Iraqi government had to hand over any actionable intelligence to us, and the effing Israelis knew the whole effing time, and they didn't effing tell us, and they didn't tell us what the heck with the effing was going to happen, and all these people are dying right now because these effing Israelis didn't tell us? And I was screaming. I was screaming into the phone. And the phone went dead. And I realized that I had been like a little bit out of control. I had an out of control moment there. And I called back Richard Fuse, and he said very calmly, Susan, we must never talk about this ever again. Okay? Mm-hmm. And we never did, but the Israelis absolutely knew every detail. They knew exactly what airline was going to be taken. They knew exactly how long it was going to take them to fly across the water. They were there ready to go. They were waiting for those airplanes to fly across the harbor of Manhattan and to strike the World Trade Center. They had picked out the best position in advance to capture the photographs. And then they already had them straight to the CIA. Straight to the Bush White House, at the highest levels of the CIA, which is how Richard Fuse would have discovered them, the existence of the video before anybody else.
Now, have you talked to your cousin Andrew Card recently?
No. Yeah. Andy is I am effectively the black sheep, but as far as it's a question of who is wrong, as far as I'm concerned, he's the black sheep of the family because. You know, my mama didn't raise no traitors. We don't believe in tearing down the country that we live in. We believe in the freedom of this country. And I am appalled that my own family member has been engaged in stuff like the Patriot Act and destroying the freedom of America. That's offensive to me.
And why do you think people went along with this thing? I mean, how many people would it take anyway? Probably less than 100.
100. I would say 50 to 100.
Okay.
75 to 100. I'll tell you, the Iraqis, when I had the Iraqi embassy, and I will tell you what they said in August, and I'll tell you what they said in September. Before, on my last meeting with the Iraqi embassy was on August 4th, and I had gone, Richard Fuse said to me on August 2nd, which was the day of Robert Mueller's nomination hearing, he said to me, Susan, don't go up to New York City again because the attack is imminent. We expect mass casualties and a possible thermonuclear device. And I said, oh, Richard, I got to check with the Iraqis one last time. I'm going to go up the day after tomorrow. I'll go up Saturday. This was a Thursday. I said, I'll go up Saturday. I'll talk to the Iraqis. I'll find out if they've heard anything from Baghdad. And I'll see you on Monday morning. I'll come to your office. And he said, oh, Susan, don't go back to New York after this. He said, it's too dangerous. There's a lot of people are going to die in this attack. This is just too dangerous. I said, okay, just this one last time. I go up to New York. I talk to the Iraqis. They said, they threw up their hands. They said, look, we know. We have nothing to give you. We have nothing to give you. We know that the United States is threatening us with war if this attack happens with the airplane hijackings and the strike on the World Trade Center. We understand that we're going to lose everything. We are trying to end the sanctions. We are trying to cooperate with you and give you everything you want. And we understand that if we could give you this information, it would be so valuable and you would appreciate it so much that we would have a tremendous response from you. We would receive such great blessings from you if we could only give this to you. We want to end the sanctions. We realize the value that this has to you, and we realize that by not giving it to you, you're going to attack us. But we don't have it. We just don't have it. Okay. Now, on fast forward now to 9/11, after the 9/11 attack, on September 18th, I go up to New York, and the diplomat has a very different take on this. He said, the senior diplomats, and this is several people I'm talking to, they say to me, Susie, why did you let 9/11 happen? You knew what was going to happen. You kept telling us about this attack. We've been listening to you tell us about this attack for months. This is horrifying. And now you come and you want us to be apologetic to you and to be sorry for you that this happened. You need to, how can you face God knowing that you let them do this to your own people? If you were so concerned about this attack, which you should have been, then you should have stopped it. But you knew more about this than anybody. So don't come and blame our country for this. How are you going to face God with what you just did? Not what you thought, huh?
Yeah.
How can you face God with what you just did to your own people? They were furious. And they said, it is the Mossad that is trying to blame Iraq. And they were correct.
Okay, just this month, we almost 10 years after the event, we captured Osama bin Laden. Well, we actually murdered him. Executed him, I guess is a better word. And I'm curious. Do you think bin Laden was a player at all? What was his role, I wonder?
Bin Laden's people. You know, it's interesting because so many of the alleged 9/11 hijackers we now know were CIA assets in fighting the Taliban, and part of the Taliban, and just, you know, connected to the whole Soviet resistance. And it turns out they were resistance to the Soviet Union, and we got ourselves in a mess, and we're working with double agents. And is it possible, we knew about this conspiracy. The thing about assets is assets are super controlled. They are heavily monitored because you know that an asset is being pushed into situations where they're going to have contact with very unusual people. And so the idea that the United States was running an asset and had no idea what the heck the asset was up to doesn't fly with me at all. That is just that is the most outrageous fantasy. We obviously learned about the 9/11 conspiracy from them. And some of them may have been playing along to try to, you know, be sent in to try to figure out what was going to happen and if they could get information about the attack. Okay? And so you start, it gets very muddy very fast. But I do believe that there were airplane hijackings and that somebody, because of the opposition, excuse me, not opposition, because of the knowledge of the advanced threats on Iraq, that there was definitely, without question in my mind, an orphan team that went in and wired explosives into the World Trade Center, elevator shafts, stairwells, the garage area, so that it would be able, and it was miniature thermonuclear devices, very, very, very advanced military weapons grade systems that were used, and probably from the United States, and I am convinced of that. Vans going in the unidentified vans going in at 3 o'clock in the morning, We know there's motive and opportunity, and then there's action. Motive, opportunity, action lead to the crime. And it's a terrible thing, but we did this to ourselves. We definitely did 9/11 to ourselves. And we need to examine the war on terrorism, and we need to realize that we are bankrupting our country for a lie, for a fraud. And we need to re-examine 9/11. I'm convinced it's imperative to re-examine 9/11 so that we can get out of the war on terrorism. We can stop doing these things to ourselves. We're hurting ourselves.
Susan, I just read an article by you saying that bin Laden may be dead, but the war on terrorism is alive and well. Speaking of that, do you think bin Laden is dead?
I think bin Laden is dead. The question is whether he died now or 10 years ago.
Yeah, right.
But I do believe that the government is convinced that he will not stick up his head and say, "Hey, I'm alive." So they know that he really is dead. That much I do believe. And I think that the bigger issue is why now? You know, the fact that they went in, that they sent the Navy SEALs in and ran the operation, why now? And I believe that it's because they are trying to close the books on 9/11, knowing that there's such intense pressure to examine it. I think that it's actually a credit to the 9/11 architects and engineers who have been going, Richard Gage, who's been going around the country raising heck about the demolition of the World Trade Center towers. And I think that they realize that they cannot afford an examination of this issue, and that a lot of Americans are going to be satisfied to say, "Hey, we got bin Laden. Now we can put this thing to rest. We don't have to deal with this issue anymore." And the problem is that, you know, you may end the 9/11 inquiry, pressure for the 9/11 inquiry, but you're not going to end the war on terrorism, because our soldiers are still deployed in Afghanistan and Iraq. And now we're going into Libya. There's heavy, heavy pressure in Washington to go into Syria and Iran. And those, you know, the war on terrorism is like we have a part one and a part two. Part one was a failure. The Iraq war was backfired on us. Afghanistan, we are the losers. We are the losers in those wars. But the military-industrial complex is selling a gazillion dollars worth of weapon systems every year. And they want it, they see themselves as an economic stimulus. And they want to keep that, they want to keep their business. And so they have to invent new conflict.
Well, Susan, earlier this week, President Obama at the State Department indicated that our intervention in the Arab world will continue for a while.
Yes.
It just seems.
Oh, God.
One thing I don't understand about President Obama and his administration is why are they going along with Bush on this thing?
Oh. Why?
That's why I asked first.
I am amazed that that the peace, that he won the Nobel Peace Prize.
And then immediately declared war on everyone.
Yes. He's more bloodthirsty than the damn neocons. And I realize there's some neocons listening to this. I believe in God. Just know that. I believe in God. I believe in trying to preserve our Earth. I am against war. I am an anti-war activist. But I'm also against terrorism, and I'm against violence, and I am not against American soldiers. I think American soldiers are being used very badly by our by the military-industrial complex, which is sending, I think they're exhausted, they are fatigued, they're young people who should be going on to develop wonderful, exciting, happy lives and families, and I just think we have compromised our young people. And I'm very sorry for it.
You've been pointing your finger at Israel. Are they involved in pushing the U.S. for intervention in the Arab world?
I think so. We're hearing that, as unbelievable as it sounds, this is coming out of the British press, and it's coming from extremely credible sources that I know tied to the British government who I have, like, email relationships with, and we've known each other about each other's work for years. And I am hearing that, believe this or not, Israel is helping to finance the rebels in Benghazi in Libya. Israel is financing them. Israel is providing munitions. And in exchange for that, the Libyan rebels have promised that Israel would have the right to set up a military base in the Green Mountains of Libya, which is close to a lot of antiquities, and there's oil there. It's a region of wealth and history and trade, and it's a key position in the close to the Mediterranean. You see, okay, there's a superior position in the Mediterranean, and Israel's going to set up a military base in Libya. Now, I got to tell you, that just shocked me.
Call me cynical or something, but it almost seems like the Bin Laden saga was like something out of professional wrestling. I mean, he seems to be a willing villain.
Oh, Bin Laden is an easy fall guy. He's an easy patsy. He is rabidly anti-West, rabidly pro-Islam, and the question is, now, you know, I will tell you my secret belief is that he was alive for 10 years, and a lot of people get really mad when I say this, but I believe that they protected him. They made him the bad guy, but then they kept him alive, and they said, hey, look, if your family plays ball with us, if your family gives us good oil contracts, because his family's like supremely wealthy. If your family essentially pays a blood debt to us, we will leave you alone, and you can go about your life, and you can stay in hiding, but you'll be alive. And I think that 10 years ago, they cut a deal with Bin Laden, that if he just kept his nose clean and stayed out of trouble, they'd let him alone. And they would pretend he was dead. That's what I think.
I actually don't think that's too far out. I mean, it appears to me, from the secondhand stories we get, Bin Laden was surprised. In other words, we turned on him.
They turn on everybody eventually. But again, they wanted to shut down. It is my belief that they wanted to shut down the 9/11 investigation because Richard Gage, who is wonderful, whom I admire very much and respect very much, and the whole 9/11 truth community was not dying the way that it was supposed to. Richard Gage has raised very important questions about the demolition of the building, and he has proven with science and engineering concepts and architectural concepts that it would have been impossible for the building to have fallen because of getting hit by an airplane. This evaporated into dust, and it's not even like there were steel girders sticking out of the ground. The steel evaporated, okay? That just doesn't happen. And so clearly this was a demolition using government-grade explosives. The only people who have this stuff is the government, United States government. So obviously the United States government was involved in the attack. And if the government, and so at this moment, when Richard Gage was getting so powerful, the Obama people said, you know what, we better shut this thing down. Let's go get get Osama bin Laden. Let's get the guy. And then most of America will be satisfied that we've solved this problem because Osama bin Laden's dead. Then we can continue the war on terrorism, and we'll shift everybody's attention onto Syria. We'll shift attention onto Iran and Libya, and we'll kind of pull everybody's attention away from Afghanistan and Iraq, and we'll just have a new war on terrorism, which protects which keeps the financing going for the military-industrial complex. But I think that it's to Richard Gage's immense credit that they had to go get him. But I think and a lot of people get really mad at me when I say this, but I believe he was alive, and I believe they were protecting him. I'm convinced somebody knew exactly where he was. Pakistani intelligence knew where he was. Everybody, you know, he was being protected. He was receiving protection from somebody.
Well, I think it's wishful thinking on their part. I don't think the 9/11 movement, the troop movement, is going to go away. I mean, just this week, a law firm in New York City, a major one, won a Freedom of Information request they've had since 2008 on all of the information from the NSD on Building 7. I mean, so not only we got all us out here questioning it, but it appears that some legal authorities are also still after the truth about 9/11. I think it's still alive.
I hope it is as strong as ever, and I hope that, and that's why I'm speaking out right now. And I, as you know, I published my book, and it came out at the end of last year, but I'm now publishing my articles. I'm publishing a series of articles going through the book and explaining the different parts of what happened so that it will get out into the public consciousness and people will really know what happened. And I think that we have got to reexamine 9/11 and really understand how we played a role in 9/11 so that we can stop the war on terrorism. Because we're destroying ourselves with this war. This is a faulty war. This is a fraud. But the consequences are not fraud. We are bankrupting ourselves. We're destroying the future for our children over this thing, and we've got to put a stop to this.
Well, Susan, the book may have been out for a while, but it's a great read, and I urge people to buy it and read it, Extreme Prejudice. And we have a link here on this webpage where this radio show is, so people can, go buy it. Extreme Prejudice. And you have agreed to come back and be on the show regularly as we continue to investigate during the 10th anniversary of 9/11.
Thank you very much, because we're going to go through the whole thing, and thank you very much, Jerry.
Susan Lindauer, thanks for being on. I'm Jerry Pippin. Until next time, thanks for listening, everyone. Cheers.